Welcome to the Bureau of Citizen Detectives, the officially unofficial podcast for Yellow Jackets on Showtime. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about the season two premiere, Friends, Romans, Countrymen. Lend me your delicious, delicious ears. Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
It's funny. I didn't make the connection between the title of the show, this episode, and the Shauna ear munching until that scene hits. And of course, you know, I'm laughing grimly at the ridiculousness of it all. And mm-hmm. I hit stop. And the first thing you see is that the episode's title, Friends, Romans, Countrymen. Ah, right. It's very funny. I thought this was a great easing back into the Yellow Jackets. I continue to be really impressed, if anything, just with one episode to judge by. Something we praised last year when we were doing our coverage on our premium podcast, Off the Clock, is how well the younger actors are aping the older versions of themselves and vice versa. And it looks like with another year of practice and writing and directing and production and watching the series, that if anything, they're even better. Like, it's astonishing how well Shauna, the two Shaunas, co-inhabit. And sometimes they do this thing where, especially on the previously on, I saw that they did the thing where they would, like, you know, rapidly cycle between the different actors at different eras, but their face and bodies and everything with the same position. It's just like, it's like spooky how well this stuff all comes off. That continues to be a lot of fun. I thought there was a lot of interesting clues. Like, you know, I think if you're wondering how the girls got into cannibalism, you look at Shauna, who is their meat master, and she's playing these sick fantasies with dead Jackie, and she's compulsively eating her ears. Like, gotta wonder if there's going to be some Jackie jerky being passed around eventually. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, you know, I enjoyed you know, the taking the piss out of Reddit culture with the Bureau of Citizen Detectives and Misty's angry downvoting at the guy who's probably going to be Elijah Woods. It's kind of untangling their story. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I'm a little bit leery of is it's there seems to be some just crazy risks and sloppy things going on amongst the people covering up crimes. I'm not sure if this is like them telling the story of people who are bad at crimes, essentially committing crimes for the first time, and maybe they're even excited by it and they're deliberately sloppy. Maybe they want to be caught, and some of this is just like dumb writing, but it's entirely possible it's the former. So I'm not going to come out and be like, oh, Jeff and Shauna are just fucking idiots for, you know, spraying a bunch of genetic evidence at this dude's thing and then slopping a bunch of turpentine over a set of things. And it's, but I don't know, that might be something going forward. But overall, yeah, I was really glad to get back into the Yellow Jackets saddle. What did you think of the first episode?
Oh, yeah, me too. This continues to be very Yellow Jackets, from the music to the mysteries, the hints of the supernatural that are sometimes easily and sometimes more difficult to explain with real world stuff. I continue to absolutely love Misty. She's great. Jeff is becoming one of my favorite characters too. Just with his I don't know, his attitude. He's got a lot of energy, a lot of life. He is able to see through some of the more fucked up stuff that's happening in his world and still enjoy it, and I really like that. But yeah, it's great. It's still very much Yellow Jackets.
If life hands you cuck lemons, you make cuck lemonade is what mm-hmm. you got to do with it sometimes.
Sure.
Yeah, his rocking out to Papa Roach was pretty funny.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about this stuff when we get there. The impulses, I want to see if maybe someone can explain to me the impulse that's going on there. But we'll see. That previously on that you mentioned is buck wild, man. That there is so much. When you try to condense season one down into about 2.5 minutes, it's insanity. It's jumping all over the place. They do a great job with it, and they kind of tell me as someone who's watched season one, everything I need to know to get a refresher.
Exactly.
But, boy, if you have not seen season one and you're trying to jump into this show right now, that will make no sense to you. That it is wild.
Yeah, this is not that kind of previously on. This is not that kind of. Oh, yeah, I've been hearing a lot about, you know, Yellow Jackets. I think I'm just going to just jump into season two. I mean, yeah, you might be able to, but like, boy. Yeah, there's just
a lot
of...
Yeah, but you're going to
have
to Zapruder film that fucking previously on.
Yeah.
You're going to have to dissect it down to its atomic particles. It's wild.
They're also expanding the world, as we talked about in the preview podcast. You know, there are these girls who we didn't get to know last season who were part of the survivors. And we see Crystal as the one that's most prominent, the one that I caught her name, who's singing, humming... befriending Misty, and they had this like kind of funny way to introduce that, like, you know, the girls we know are kind of like bitchily around the table talking, and they're like, who are they? Like, look at these girls over there, what are they even talking about? Like, kind of hand waving to these crazy mysterious girls we've never met before, and what are they even doing over there? I thought it's funny that the existing characters are kind of commenting on these characters' positions in the world from an in-universe position. My position is that these girls position in the judge. What the fuck? The fuck is happening? Anyway, I thought that was really funny and cool too.
Yeah, the cliques within cliques, man. Even in this group of girls who's trying to survive in the wilderness, there's still the cliques, you know, the out groups.
Yeah.
Scary stuff.
Right. Also, people who are squeamish about violence against dogs and pets. I got bad news for you about Steve. I think Steve's gonna go the way of Ralphie or whatever the hell the old pet was. I got bad feelings about Steve.
Yeah, we'll see. Let's give Ty another chance. You know, maybe the first dog, you know, didn't take.
Maybe you're state senator, and maybe you also should be on the do not adopt list. You know, I'm just saying. Mm-hmm, she's developing a track record here, and some of the weird mood swings she goes through around poor old Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Not good. Not good. Not good for Steve's longevity.
No, that's going to end poorly. I'm with you. All right, should we start with the recap?
Yeah, why not? The wilderness is the space between the ads. We'll be right back.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Don't freeze to death. Come back to our coverage of Yellowjackets.
All right, this episode jumps around a lot. This is maybe the episode that jumps around the most out of any I've seen between the wilderness and the current day. So try and keep up. But here we go. We start off in the wilderness. While everyone else sleeps, Lottie makes tea and Travis and Nat go out, I think, simultaneously hunting and looking for Hobby. Lottie does some shaman shit, presumably to keep them safe, and then she draws the symbol on the window.
Yeah, I like, I don't know, you can definitely see the factions here. The Nat is on team, this is bullshit, and Travis is on team, you know, if it works, it works. But yeah, Lottie's gone full, she's ashing them up, she's smudging them, she's giving them blood tea, and claiming that all of her interactions, all of her things are keeping them alive.
Yeah.
By
using the time-tested, can't disprove it techniques,
right,
of, well, you keep coming back alive, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah, does that mean it has anything to do with your bullshit? No.
Yeah. You know, here in America, most of us wear underwear every day. Mm-hmm. Hardly anyone's been killed by tigers. I think people that get killed by tigers probably just weren't wearing underwear.
Yeah.
Only makes sense to me. I like the touch of the fact that, you know, it's very cold and obviously they didn't pack winter clothes, and they got Travis and Nat are like stuffing their shirts and stuff with old magazines and rumpled up newspaper, mm-hmm, to give them a little. It's like the soldiers in the Revolutionary War wrapping their feet with bandages and papers and whatnot. It's just very improvised survival cold gear. And it doesn't look that effective. Because I got to say, I don't buy these guys. She's not even wearing a hat. Nat's not even wearing a hat. I hear that's like the most important thing that you could wear to keep yourself warm.
She's got hair. She can flop that down over her ears.
She does have hair. And she's got a highly effective headband, you know, that gives her that like really tribal land before time warrior woman look. But doesn't do much to trap the heat that's escaping from her head.
Sure.
Maybe make a paper mache pirate hat or something to put on. Anything, really.
There you go. Yeah. Surely there was a hat. Like, Coach must have a hat, right? Somebody there packed a hat?
I don't know. Didn't they leave, like, it was mid-fall?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're not going to get, like, a giant Russian winter hat, but you could at least get a baseball
any hat
cap
at
or
all?
Something. Yeah.
Maybe. Oh, well, I guess, yeah, if that would do something. Did you see any of the theories going around? Because like everybody's Twitter pated about the symbol, and you know, last year there was people looking at you know, like what this could mean. There's people like, is this part of the hobo code? Is this some kind of weird language or symbols?
Well, it's a B, right? I mean, it's quite obviously a yellow jacket.
The symbol, the occult symbol that you're thinking is a yellow jacket.
Yeah, it's got the head, which is the circle, the triangle is the body, it's got this little hook thing, which is the stinger, and then the things coming off the sides are
I have never
wings.
Seen anyone suggest that this is a yellow jacket.
What?
Really?
I just thought everybody assumed, am I the only one assuming this is a yellow jacket?
Lottie didn't come up with this symbol.
It was in the woods, which is creepy.
Okay.
I think it's even creepier if it's actually a yellow jacket symbol. I don't, that's what I was assuming. Man, maybe I'm Maybe I'm assuming too much.
There's a lot of, so this is going to be a theory that I was reading about this week and I've kind of gotten enamored with. But a lot of people have noticed that this looks like it shares a lot of similarities to the old alchemaic symbols, you know, where people are trying to discover the secret to turning, transmuting materials one from the other. And these alchemaic symbols have all these, like, you know, they're bristling with these weird lines and shapes, and especially that, like, kind of like crossed hook that's popping off. That's a hallmark. It doesn't map to any existing one, but that's a theory that's going to become interesting later in the episode, I should say.
Okay. I got theories of my own. I think Javi is the old man in the cabin. And that's why the symbol is out there, because he already knows the symbol.
Holy shit. You're putting some dark into my yellow jackets. Is that is that a sincere? Okay. All right.
Oh, yeah. He's trapped in the.
Can I ever tell with you if this is Dead Man's Brew 2.0, which that hell, that could have been a sincere theory, too. I still, 12 years later, not sure. however long ago it was.
Who knows? They're doing some nice stuff here. They'll get into it later in more detail, but I like just seeing Thaisa tied to Van to prevent her sleepwalking. They just show a quick shot of that here, and they're playing I Used to Be 17 by AJ Mitchell. I'm not super familiar with that song, but I bet a lot of people are. Then we cut to 1998, which is not, well, it's what, like 16 months after the last scene, maybe 15-14, somewhere in there. The kids are returning to civilization. They're surrounded by clamoring reporters. Lottie's having some problems readjusting, so they shock the shit out of her brain, send her to an asylum. It seems to fix her, and she spends her time calming mentally ill people.
Yeah. The one detail I noticed from the rescue, other than Lottie being kind of catatonic, is Misty, you know, predictably kind of likes this attention. Like, everyone else is kind of shocked and horrified, and you can see this kind of slow smile breaking out on Misty's face. She wants to talk to the camera. She wants to grab the microphones, and she's prevented from doing so. But fucking Misty, man.
Yeah, she's great. I was trying to see if there was anybody in this mix that we did not see yet or didn't see in this episode. I don't think so, because we're going to get adult Lottie later.
We don't see a lot. Lottie's too. I think they're trying to be cagey about, you know, who, because they're still trying to be cagey about who actually lived and who actually died. Besides the ones we've already seen. What'd you make of the visions that she has during the electroshock therapy sessions?
Oh boy, is this the? What exactly were the visions? I'm trying to remember them, because this is not the stump stuff that's later with Travis.
Right. Travis and his panic attack. This is so she is walking through a tunnel that seems partially flooded of ankle deep water, and she goes through the flooded port and she finds this altar that is just lit aglow with candles. Actually, it shares a lot of similarities between the stump scene, because they're just flooded by these points of candlelight. A lot of people were saying that this is her having a flashback to an experience with a mine shaft that the girls are going to discover. We'll come to understand that they discover. But okay. I looked at that, and this does not look like a mine shaft. This looks like a maintenance tunnel that you would find, you know, beneath any large building. It's got cement floors and concrete blocks. It's got lighting. It doesn't look like any mine shaft I've ever seen. Certainly not the kind of mine shaft I think they're implying, that would be like old timey, you know, gold brush era type affair. But it's important because people are looking for this connection. Because, like, as I mentioned, this alchemaic symbol, we talked about in the preview podcast, the river running red and all this other stuff. And I mentioned that I thought that was because of some kind of mineral, like iron ore or whatever. I guess one of the leading theories of what's going on here is the girls have been exposed to some kind of environmental toxin. There's a couple of examples being put forward. It could be like a lead lead poisoning. Like, there's lead seeping into the water. There's a lot of fixation this episode on getting the water and who's getting the water and the fact that Misty mm-hmm. is the person who's been assigned to get the water. And she's got a long history of poisoning people already. So is she unintentionally mm-hmm. or intentionally poisoning them again? But another one is this mineral called cinnabar, which makes me hungry for giant cinnamon rolls covered in frosting. But it's this mineral that has like this red oxidizing color to it. But it's famous for being one of the primary sources of mercury. And if you know anything about mercury poisoning, like the phrase mad as a hatter or the mad hatter, that was from the, I guess when you used to be a person who makes hats. You would affix the felt with a mercury compound, and the hatters from exposure to this mercury compound would quite literally go insane and then die. The thing is I think with both lead and mercury poisoning that those effects are like permanent. It's not something that could be turned off or on. Although lead lead makes the most sense because it leads to like natural aggression and like poor decision-making problem, decision-making processes and impulse control. And boy, you look at like Shauna and Ty and even Misty and Nat in the current day, like that is them to a T. But lead doesn't rust and oxidize into red. So you've got, that doesn't explain the river.
So this is all in an effort to what? Explain the behavior of the girls that they would turn to cannibalism and some kind of weird cult.
Just the general lady of the flies. Like, why did it descend to chaos and bloodshed? And it didn't seem like it did that initially.
Do we need an explanation? I mean, this happens, right? I mean, people, you know, not everybody, but I guess the ones who aren't prone to joining into this cult-like behavior when they're in a dire situation are probably hunted and eaten by the cannibals.
Yeah, I mean, do we need an explanation? No. I mean, I guess I would like an explanation other than supernatural. I'm fine with this being supernatural.
I think we'll get one.
It doesn't bother me. But like, I
think it's going to be more like peer pressure and like I said, dire circumstances and
eat Jackie. All the cool girls are doing it.
Not that kind of peer pressure. More like, we're going to beat the shit out of you until you do it. Or
I see.
Yeah, you know, bullying.
There you go.
Some things that the teenagers in general and teenage girls can be known for. So,
sure.
I don't know. I guess I wasn't looking in those corners of the story trying to say, like, hey, they must be exposed to some weird chemical or something like that. Because Lottie's always had it, right? Like, Lottie's
always
abilities,
had
whatever. Yeah, she's always been like this. She was a kid, so.
And the thing is like, because she's calming this person who's having some kind of episode, she's doing stock calming techniques, you know, like telling them, you know, synchronized breathing. And she also says, she's not saying you'll be healed when you join my cult or get spiritual enlightenment. She's saying that these people are going to help you like they've helped me. Implying that maybe there was a time where Lottie did have a breakthrough in treatment and was getting some kind of stability before she crashed back into whatever purple people eating cult that she is she founded and still a member of.
Yeah, maybe it's a good time to talk about that. Let's go over to present day where an adult Lottie, who we've not seen before, speaks to her cult followers about finding the version of themselves that knows who they are. And then we cut very quickly back to 1998, and Lottie screams at the reporters.
Yeah, that's the cold open. What'd you make of everybody wearing this purple color?
I don't know. I mean, cults like to exert control through wardrobe as well, you know? If you make everybody kind of buy into the behaviors... And we're probably going to see that this is an extension of the stuff that happened in the woods, right? In the wilderness, when they started, they didn't have, I guess, purple robes and shit. All they had was bear skins and deer antlers. And I bet Lottie's going to be at the forefront of that.
Yeah, it's funny because when I think of purple, I tend to think in terms of royalty. You know, because sure. for a long time that was associated because, I don't know, something about the rarity of the dye, only rich people could afford it. But this is like, if anything, faded.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you are supposed to understand that, you know, because it's like, I'm going to throw a couple things out here. It's likely that Lottie is the queen of antlers or the, yep. the witch antler woman. And she's stylizing herself that, like, outside of that wilderness setting, she would be kind of like a queen in exile. And, mm-hmm. like, the faded purple, is that supposed to represent, like, this lost royalty that she's hoping to recapture?
Yeah, that sounds like it could be.
Or it's a muted kind of light purple, so she's trying to somewhat stay...
kinder, gentler, more...
Under the acceptable. Radar. She's not trying to draw attention to, you know...
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We'll see later in the episode that there's still some very weird shit going on here. It's not just... thinking positive and trying to get in touch with your inner self.
It made me think of Hank's wife Marie from Breaking Bad, though. I was like, it'd be really funny if she was just sitting there, because that's kind of yeah, like her Betsy uniform.
Totally, yeah.
Betsy's sitting there in this faded purple blouse with a nice skirt.
Yep,
pump a symbol. You know, yeah,
that'd be great. All right, we go over to Shauna, current day still. She's subjected to a mock interrogation by Misty. She gets fed up with the questions and decides to leave. Misty feels underappreciated and that they probably missed something. Oh, yeah. Misty. I love Misty.
Misty's feeling of underappreciation is like Michael Jordan's feeling of... taking things personal. It's like mm-hmm. just a hair trigger. Like anything happens and it's just like, I must not be appreciated right now.
Yeah. The highs of Misty's emotional environment are like super high, right? She's this roller coaster of emotion. He gets the tiniest compliment and boom, she's on the moon.
Yes.
She gets the tiniest like rebuke and boom, she's in the deepest valley. Yeah.
Do we know anything about her home life yet? Did they explore that in season one?
As a kid or as an adult?
Where
right
did
now?
She develop this ultra insecure attachment? Because that's what it is. It's just like, you know, you get the slightest crumb of attention or affection or positive regard. Mm-hmm. And it's like rescuing a drowning person. You know, that's one of the things they say, that like yeah. you go to rescue a drowning person. And a lot of times they'll just like overwhelm you and try to drown the rescuer. And then, you know, obviously when the rescuer is like, fuck this, and pushes off, then you start. It's I don't know. I wonder, like, what the hell happened with her home life that left her this just completely unable to separate herself from other people and their emotions.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious if we'll get more information about that.
And also also end up being a master manipulator on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly a lot of what you would consider pretty standard bullying stuff happening mm-hmm. with the other girls, but I don't know if it starts there. That mm-hmm. might just be an extension of her home life, but we'll see.
Mm.
I want my lawyer cookie is hilarious. She communicates and reinforces people's ideas through baked goods, I guess. I love it. And this yeah, Hawaii 50 punch sequence. I want to try.
Her playing bad cop with this vocoder, you know, cell phone app yeah. is just, it's funny because like when we come back from this, from the opening credits, which I don't, do we want to talk about that? There's, you know, new opening credits.
It's updated. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of really good creepy Misty. If you want to mm-hmm. go through some of those scenes, but we come out of this and like Sean is being interrogated. I'm like, oh my God, they're really advancing the plot on this present day stuff. And it turns out it's just Misty, but I think Misty's onto something. I don't think any of these ladies would stand up the even the most cursory of scrutiny.
Yeah, no, I love this line of the story here, because I think what's going to happen is Misty's group is going to end up being her worst nightmare, right? Because they're the Bureau of Citizen Detectives. They're
yes
looking for things. They're looking to stir shit up, right, and solve mysteries in their community, and they're already on to this. And I kind of love how deliciously, you know, ironic that is, that she'd be part of this community that would then potentially crack their case wide open.
Right, right. Yeah, no, there's a lot of that. Like, the community, she makes herself a, you know, she ends up either being... she's super helpful, and then she tries to make herself indispensable, and then it, like, warps back into something toxic, and then they reject her. It's like, I wonder... Also, I wonder if they're like, we want to recreate the dynamic that Misty had with the Fixer of last season, and they're going to have this character that, you know, we've seen the trailer. We even talked about this on the preview. Mm-hmm. It's not a spoiler. Elijah Woods is one of these citizen detectives.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's going to be essentially a rerun of the relationship that she had with the Fixer, only with a more overt romantic entanglement to it.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that, if that's going to be the case, because I really enjoy how she manipulates others, and to see her do it to... you know, some other people who claim to be just as, like...
And he's just the same.
Whatever,
like, he's
her.
Like, yeah. Yeah, his first message, if this is indeed turns out to be Elijah Woods, is him just casually hacking in and getting all of her financial details. Like, it's like his curiosity is reason enough to just violate people's boundaries and privacy. And
yeah.
I thought that was... It's interesting to see her try to run that plot back with, like, someone who is on the ball about... Again, this weird true crime... You know, there's some people that just, like, they just watch too much true crime. Mm-hmm. They're seeing serial killers in every shadow and every pop trunk in every shopping mall parking lot, right?
And sometimes there's a body in the trunk, you know?
Yeah, you know, every once in a while the broken clock is right and there is a serial killer in your backseat. But most of the time you're just kind of probably a paranoid loon.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess, is true crime, is that like the prepper gene? Is that like how, like, in a feminine person, prepper gene manifests?
Oh, I don't know if it has to do with men or women or whatever, but very similar.
Most, but not all, preppers are men. And I think I've seen statistics that true crime, like podcasts and things like that, the audience of that is mostly, but not all, female people that
express
feminine
generally
qualities.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like, if you are a man and you don't feel like in control of the world, the thing you do is you start storing guns and cans of peaches. And if you're a woman and you don't feel like controlling the world, you find out all the ways people can abuse and kill you and wear your skin as a dress. And then you just assemble your life to where that will never happen to you because you're smart and you're well informed.
Right. Yeah. Makes sense.
So, can't wait to see a femmed up Elijah Wood coming on here as a citizen detective. And I don't know. I might have destroyed my own theory right there.
All right. Thaisa, let's go to her. She replaces the family dog at the shelter. The person who works there tells her how much it means that someone real won the election. And then her campaign manager calls her and she's planning her re-election already, even though she hasn't even taken office yet. I think this is stressing how busy, how many pressures there are in her life right now that might cause her to do some crazy shit with Steve. We'll see. Steve the dog.
Dude, like I said, I wouldn't get attached to this dog. I feel like Thaisa picking out this dog, I saw the Dark Mother. She doesn't give a shit about this dog. This is just a naked attempt to get back into this child's life.
100%.
With almost like, it's also like Ty does this thing where she, it feels like she continually forgets the shit that's happening to her. You know?
Forgets?
Or is it just the different personalities having dominance over her?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's part of it. Because she doesn't know that she's created a dog altar in the basement, right?
Do we know that she's created the dog altar?
Not explicitly, no. They never showed her creating it, but you can assume, right?
Because I saw a lot of
bite on her hand.
Yeah, but I also saw a theory that, like, if you were in the purple people eating cult and you wanted to, like, start pulling at the threads of your wayward members, a good way to do that is to take this person and, you know, start fucking with them. Take away, you know, to take away all. Yeah.
Bite their hand, make them think that they created a dog altar.
Uh-huh, yeah. When they're having a fugue state. But no, sure. I think probably she did.
It's implied, yeah. And I'm going with that.
But just her whole manner is like where she's, you know, she's not really thinking about the election. There's a lot of It seems like they ran this kind of cynical thing where they promised people the moon. It's a very populist thing. They promised people the moon. They know they can't deliver half of it, but now they're going to have fire on all sides because they're trying to push an agenda that's going to piss off the one side. And then they're also not going to deal near as much as they're going to be attacked on both sides. My theory about that, it's a popular theory, is that the purple people-eating cult is kind of pushing her to the top for their own agenda and purposes, and they don't care about any political ramifications.
Could be.
But yeah. And we can see that in the personification. As soon as she gets off her phone, the phone with the campaign manager, she sees one of the people who volunteered for her. I thought it was implied that she might be gay, the person the phone banked for, and she's talking about it feels good to support someone who's like actually living the life and whatnot. You can see like marital problems might be a problem for her, like if there's a significant amount of people that are attracted to that image of her being a family person and being a relatively normal person.
Her marriage is all but over at this point, like.
And it's threatening to, because like Simone's making naked threats that if you don't get this shit handled, I'm going to go to the press. Which, fair enough. Like, if I knew my wife, who had just won state senator, was cutting off dogs' heads and hearts and making shrines to evil in our basement to hurt our child, that's something that voters probably should know. That's something the citizens should probably know for the next election.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even just like, hey, I'm going to go public with this if you don't get some help. She has to step down from her position too, is one of the demands from Simone.
Right.
So like,
yes.
I think that's going to be a non-starter for her. I don't think she's willing to give that up, but.
Right.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what links, because here's the thing. I don't think Simone has any idea who she's dealing with. Like,
no.
Thaisa is a very serious person and will play dirtier than any of them. Maybe almost as dirty as Misty when pressed. And I think Simone is walking into just a meat grinder. Yeah. Maybe literally. I don't know. She might end up eating Simone. I'm not sure yet.
I tell you, she's already like, she hasn't even fucking got the adoption paperwork on poor Steve here, and she's already upset with this just adorable dog.
Bad news. All right, Misty is sitting at home trying to resist calling Natalie. She browses the Bureau of Citizen Detectives website and finds Adam's missing person post. Seems like they're starting to piece together things, and she downvotes the post, which I'm thinking is a trail of sorts. You maybe don't want to downvote a missing person's post.
Yeah, I wonder.
She's probably the only one.
It looks like I couldn't quite read it because the edges of the screen were blurred because they're doing this kind of like fisheye lens. But it looks like that this is Forumit, which is like the forum equivalent of Reddit. And like all of the sub forums are /F/
instead of /R/.
I think this is missing people persons, or I can't remember what. But it looked like it was actually this is the home for the Bureau of Citizen Detectives. But like, yeah, and did you see this guy who was doing all this sleuthing on Adam's case? His username was Putting the Sick in Forensic.
God.
But yeah, he's already been through a purchase history and is looking for all the tells and saying that he's noticed that there's recently, you know, it's pretty normal, but there's recent spike in nice restaurants and lingerie purchases. And he's like, it's always the husband unless it's the mysterious lady friend. So this guy's already homing in on Shauna and Jeff. And oh, I also like that Misty's username is African Gray.
Yeah.
After her parrot.
Yeah. Pretty good. I'm just so excited by this scene because it implies this future where Misty is going to have to handle her group and the cops at some point, because we know from the preview, like the cops do get involved in this.
Sure.
So
they have to.
Totally. And I just can't wait. I cannot wait to watch Misty handle everyone. It's going to be so much fun
because she's felt mostly in control. And like, how long can she maintain that? I mean, maybe she could just handle everything and everyone. That's kind of exciting, too.
I think if it's going to get out of hand and out of control, it's going to be because of Shauna or, you know, Natalie or Thaisa. Well, one of them, not because Misty fucks up.
Yeah. Oh, I did, and again, her angry downvote of putting a sick in forensic has already become a reaction gift that people are using on like the Yellow Jacket subreddit to express disapproval with opinions they don't agree with.
Love it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Good stuff.
Shauna gets home and receives attitude from her daughter, Kelly. Kelly brings up Adam, and Shauna reveals that she's already told Jeff about the affair, and Kelly gets pissed off about that.
Pass the shrooms. We'll be right back. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All hail the Antler Queen. We're back with more Yellow Jackets.
I don't know. Yeah. Kelly's getting just yanked around everywhere, huh?
Yeah.
I feel so bad for her.
Was she ever cool? Because I only watched like the last third of the season to prep for this because I was short on time. Was Kelly ever like cool? Or she always been
this shitty? Always sucks. Yeah, she's always been a shitty teen, but
I thought so too. And it's like
I feel bad for her now. Like whatever she was before, yeah. Like her life has just turned upside down over the last month.
Hmm. But it's like she just seems like I don't know. It's a trick that they're doing, I think, to make this daughter seem just like they're Skylar Whiting her is what they're doing. They're making her completely understandable reactions to her parents perhaps being accomplices or perpetrators of a murder and doing all this bizarre, you know, sexual acting out and whatnot. And they're making it seem like she's the stick in the mud.
Yeah, like she's being gaslighted and the show is like saying,
come on,
cool.
Kelly, let Shauna and Jeff have fun. Just go to college so they can have fun. They go murder a couple other hot guys after Shauna seduces them and get some hot sex done. And say but it's like I recognize what they're doing. They're making this person because they are opposing our protagonist. This is going to be a ton of Kelly hate, I feel like.
No, I feel
but
bad
she
for
is
her.
The, kind of it's... the worst.
She started out as the worst. Yeah, she was pretty shitty, but I don't know.
Let me ask you this. What did your fucking boyfriend do? So if I want to push back on this, it doesn't seem like she has a normal, nice relationship with anyone.
Wrong place, wrong time for him in this scene. Yeah, I don't know. She's going to be a messed up kid. Look, she's got really messed up parents, or at least one really messed up parent. Yeah. We're starting to see that the other is maybe messed up in some ways, too. So... I don't know. Feel bad for
Yeah.
him.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy, this kid, he's, and also they also saddled this contradictions. Like, you got it. Dad has a right to know. Well, I already told him. I can't believe you told, you know, it's like, she's just.
Yeah.
The Skylar Whitener. I'm just saying.
There's no way to win with her is the problem. Right. So we're back in the wilderness. Shauna plays the MASH game. The kid, everybody's played this game, right? In middle school.
Sure.
That was a fun game.
They always did it with when they played it back in my middle school. They always had this kind of like contraption that they would fold of like,
yeah,
and you put
so that's
your
another
fingers
version
in it,
of
and
it
would open and
sure.
close and open and close, and it would unfold this, and then
and each
that,
like compartment would have something different written
yeah,
on it,
have
and
a
you
different
would just
color
like...
and a different number, and then you unfold them all and tell your fortune. Mm-hmm. I've never played this version of it. Maybe I'm too,
oh really okay
yeah I graduated in 95, so maybe this is like 3 years later they're playing it this way, but
I want to say all the letters at the top that spell MASH stand for something. I don't remember them all. I think the S was spouse. I think the H was
money.
House.
There's money.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe
oh,
the
man.
M stand for maybe.
M stands for maybe, and the A stands for oh man.
Yeah. Oh man. Ah, shucks. Heck. Uh-huh. I don't know. I don't have to tell you.
Mansion, apartment, shack, and house. Shack?
Oh, so it's this. So it's a, that's
so that's
roughly,
one category.
Yeah, that's roughly like, you know, how well you're going to do on your living conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you figure out your spouse, you figure out all that stuff. Yeah. Anyway, she's playing this with Jackie's corpse, which is pretty morbid. It's all frozen. It's been 2 months, we find out, and she's still out there playing with this corpse.
Well, it's really interesting because I thought we were in a flashback. It's like, oh, we flashbacked within the flashback and we're seeing like, you know, more Jackie and Shauna interactions before Jackie dies. And then it's no, she's a corpse. And I saw this in reading. People pointed out that one of the cool things they did is when Shauna's talking in this scene, she has breath forming. Mm-hmm. And when Jackie talks, she doesn't. So, nice. Like, even in Shauna's, like, twisted, sick fantasy, she realizes that Jackie's
oh,
dead
yeah.
on some level. Yeah,
she knows that she's talking to her own guilt here, for sure.
Yeah. So this is, that's important to note, too, that, like, everything that Jackie is saying is things that Shauna is thinking.
Yeah, even when she's, like, kind of trying to interrogate this vision that she's having, when she's saying like, but I didn't know that, and Jackie says,
yes, you did.
No, you did. Uh-huh. Yeah, I like that stuff. Anyway, that's a quick scene there, and then Thaisa sees that Van has rope burns on her wrist from the sleepwalking restraints. The group's waiting for Shauna to return with the meat, and someone named Mari, I never knew her name in season one, but she's the keeper of the food, I guess. She's pissed that she's still out there playing with Jackie's corpse after 2 months. Like I said, some of the unfamiliar Yellow Jackets get some screen time. Crystal, the one you mentioned, is humming and annoying them all.
Yep. Van's face has healed remarkably in the last 2 months. It's insane. Yes. The level of restoration they're able to do with no antibiotics and essentially just some dirty thread. Incredible, uh-huh. incredible results that she's getting. I gotta say, I'm in awe of this woman's skin.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, kids heal fast, man. You can rip up with their faces, they'll heal right up.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah, you can have a wolf just tear half their face off to where you can see their teeth and jaw, and mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. next season is just, you know, kind of cool scars.
I just talked a little bit about the music in this episode being good. There's another Smashing Pumpkins track here, and it is a pretty deep cut. I mean, it was played on the radio. It's called Drown.
Was it? Because I was like, I don't know that I recognized it.
Yeah, it was played on the radio, but it wasn't a single. It wasn't like off one of their albums.
How the hell did they get radio play without being a single?
It was on a soundtrack for the movie Singles, which I've never seen. But yeah, it got radio play despite not being a single, which is crazy because that usually doesn't happen.
Right. Well, the soundtrack explains it.
Yeah. This scene told me that like Shauna's way more fucked up than I even realized. Like I said, the 2 months of sitting there playing with this corpse, not playing with it, but like having conversations with it,
trying to
imagine that Jackie's not dead while sitting next to this. Granted, the body isn't rotting necessarily, but like
it's frozen,
you're sitting next
solid,
to a corpse.
No, it's fucked up, and it's just, I think, a sign of how much she feels guilty about, you know, stealing Jackie's boyfriend.
Oh yeah, no, all this stuff is about her guilt, and her guilt of getting, not being able to admit it, not being able to accept the responsibility of having done something so bad, and getting Jackie killed for it, right? Because she's the one who sent her outside. Refuse to, like, and granted, like, Jackie, you know, it
Jackie's
was
own stubbornness is what killed her. Yeah.
Yeah. She sucked in her own ways, but like, Shauna feels very guilty for having gotten her in the situation where she died.
Yeah. And it's, I'm not going to judge children. Jackie clearly was shaped into the mold by, you know, life events and the way she was raised and the coaches telling her that
parents,
she needs to be this. Yeah. So, like, you know, she came by all that honestly, and she's not going to have a chance to grow up and, like, change and grow like all the others will. So it's like, I see a lot of people just hate Jackie. That's because, like, I didn't, you know, I didn't engage a lot with the fan community when I was just watching it, like, you know, after the fact last season. But, like, man, people really fucking hate Jackie, think Jackie sucks.
I mean, but the show puts their thumb on that scale, right? I mean, she's not helping with the chores out in the wilderness. She's
wants to be a leader just because she was the leader, and she wants to kind of, like, her word is what goes, and it kind of does in the beginning, because she does have that respect as team captain. She's also ruthless, you know. I don't know.
She's entitled.
Keep in mind that,
I think that's one of the big problems.
Yeah, and she's, you know, she has, like, a little low grade kind of, I think, abusive relationship going with Shauna here. But yeah, she's also, what, 17, 18? Raise your hand if you lived your teenage years perfectly and did not hurt anyone or yourself.
And no hands were raised.
I can't raise my hand anyway.
Nope. All right. So we go back to Jackie and Shauna talking. Jackie asks her how her and Jeff hooked up, and Jackie gets pretty pissed off. And Shauna shoves her corpse, and her ear falls off. So Shauna just, you know, does what you do. She tucks it in her pocket.
Yeah, you know, what are you going to do?
And then goes back to the other girls with even smaller rations of meat.
I think you spit on the ends of the ear, and you stick it to her face for like five to... It's like super glue at that point. You just stick it back on.
Oh, yeah.
And then when it falls off in the spring...
Yeah. This is why I love this show, man. They are willing to go places with these scenes that I can't imagine they'll go. Like, talking to the corpse is one thing. Its ear falling off, her tucking it in the pocket, and then going right to the ration stuff. I'm like, are those ear-sized rations? Like, what are we... I just keep waiting for them to start eating people. And the show, in the meantime, is still doing ever more fucked up things. It's just delving into dark topics that I don't often see in shows.
Yeah. Did you think that she was going to eat the ear when she was holding, when, like, at the end of the episode? Because that, like, until she actually popped it in her mouth, I was kind of like, where are they going with this?
So in that final scene, the whole scene, as soon as I see the ear, I'm like, do not eat that ear, do not take a bite of that ear. If and then she does, and of course, it's disgusting.
It's the forbidden Cinnabon. I wonder if there's going to, like, if there is a suggestion that I wonder if Shauna will even realize when she crosses that line. Like, we're gonna have another scene where, like, her and Jackie are fighting, she shoves her and Jackie falls over, and, like, it reveals her backside, and there's already big strips of, like, Shauna's already done it, doesn't even remember, because there's, like, a lot of that going around, a lot of fugue states.
Sure. Trauma induced fugue state. Yeah,
sure. And she's still super pregnant. That's the other thing. It's like, what the hell is going to happen to this baby, man? I was hoping to see, like, a baby bundle in the rescue footage. Like, there'd be, like, some, you know, a guy in a police parka, like, rushing off this bundle of joy. So I did not see one. Now, we didn't see much, so.
Yeah.
But I, yeah, what the hell happened to that baby?
I don't know. I don't like its chances out in the wilderness with a bunch of crazy cultist cannibals.
No, sir.
All right, let's come back to current day. Shauna held on to Jeff's ID. She lied to Misty about it, obviously. And a drawing that he did of her. And one of his keys, which sparks an idea in her head. And she calls Jeff, who is in a great mood, always in a great mood. Love this guy. She tells him she has the key to his studio and she's worried that there might be some images of her in there.
Yes, this is true.
This is a problem.
Yeah, I think that the key, it looked like it was painted. You know, that he had hand painted it, and that kind of tipped her off to like, oh God, what if there's more of this? And oh, there is so much more. Don't you worry, Shauna.
Yeah, I figured as soon as like I realized what was happening, I'm like, oh, there's gonna be like a shrine to you, not just a couple of paintings.
Yeah, and Jeff gets pretty emotional about, you know, he's feeling some things about this continued evidence of his wife being unfaithful.
Uh-huh. And we'll see that manifest later.
Yep.
Sammy gets out of school and Thaisa introduces him to the new dog, Steve. Simone runs up and tells Thaisa to stay the fuck away from Sammy. She sends Sammy away, tells Thaisa that she found the dog head altar and that she needs to step down from office and get treatment or she's going to the press with it. Yikes. That's like I said, I don't think Simone knows who she's dealing with here. I wouldn't be surprised if a head is added to that altar at some point. That's hard to cover up. Murdering your spouse,
even as a state senator.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know if it'll go that far, but she better watch herself, man. Simone is getting in deep with a psychopath.
Yeah, and I don't want to see Simone get murdered and Sammy end up a tight, because like I just felt so bad for Sam last year. You know, him being kind of like tormented by this evil mother who's his real mother, who's eating dirt and staring at him outside the window and just.
Yeah.
Generally terrorizing him and like him being stuck with her full time. Oof.
And the sadness of that like duality where he's telling her you're not the bad one. Like there's something deeply sad about like being tortured by a different personality of the same person. I don't know. So yeah, we'll see where that goes, but nowhere good, I'm sure. In the wilderness again. Travis and Nat stumble upon the corpse of a fox, which Travis mistakes for his little brother, Javi. He wants to keep searching for Javi even farther out than they've already been and leave earlier to continue searching. So they mark the tree and head back before dark.
Yeah, they're going to have to leave before dark because they're already leaving like at dawn. I thought that was cool. I really liked how, because it makes sense. You know, you see this thing, it might be a face to kind of snow, and you're uncovering it, and it's a skeletal thing, and like the first thing you think about your brother, and it just being revealed to be the fox. I like it. And that also that Nat and him are like systematically, you know, mapping this out and tying. I think that someone's going to start fucking with these strings, though. Right.
Oh, the markers.
Like anytime you see someone leaving a breadcrumb in the wilderness to kind of track their way, like the easiest thing to do in the world is this. Yeah, if you're like the evil witch trying to, trap Hansel and Gretel, or you're trying to undo the you just start untying that or tying it to different places or.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know if we're in like a Bermuda Triangle-esque situation out here. And if there's something supernatural keeping them there, but I could see these markers kind of being an indication of that at some point. If they start moving around and no one is taking responsibility or can because of the scenario.
It's lead and mercury.
Yeah, lead and mercury. All right, current day. Misty tries to find out where Nat went from the motel clerk. She gets a lot of attitude and gives even more back. And it takes some convincing, but she eventually gets him to admit that Nat took off in the middle of the night.
Yeah, this hotel clerk or motel clerk, I guess, this no-tell motel clerk, has a lot more bottom than you give him credit for. Like, I like it. He stands tall against her just being kind of misty, and then she threatens him with his personal details, and he's like, look, this motel doesn't have Wi-Fi, functional air conditioning, or an ice machine. What it does have is discretion. If you stayed here last week, no, you didn't. I really like
even
that.
Even if you did, no, you didn't. Yeah.
And what she finally breaks him with is the threat of her abnormally large bladder just staying there and bothering her. That's the thing that actually makes him crack. Not personal.
The threat
day,
of
just
her continued presence. Yeah.
Oh, you suck so much. Just you hanging around. It's just, okay, get the fuck out of here. Yeah. It's really funny. And God, Christina Ricci's smile, which I always thought, you know, you and I both kind of grew up with Christina Ricci, right?
Oh, yeah. Totally.
See her in Adam's Family. I've always had a crush on her. Always thought her smile is so sweet and attractive. And it's just unhinged and insane now.
Mm-hmm. Like, love it.
I can't ever see her grin in any kind of way without thinking of Misty at this point.
Those big ol' eyes she's got. And the glasses amplifying that. It's so good.
Yeah, it's staring into the mouth of madness. It's great.
Shauna and Jeff go to Adam's art studio. And there they find all the paintings of Shauna. Just so many paintings of Shauna. Shauna talks Jeff through his complex feelings that he's experiencing, which turns them both on, and they have sex on one of the tables. Jeff being Jeff here again. Before we get to the weird Jeff, let's get to the fun Jeff. How do you get an art major off your front porch? You pay for the pizza. Good stuff.
So good.
Is he coming up with this on the fly? Does he always do that? Because later on, he's going to fail.
It does seem like, he's always riffing on these dad jokes.
All right.
And it's like, it was funny because, like, I've got this theory on, like, why dad jokes become a thing. It's because, like, you know, you have these kids and they start off pretty dumb and they don't understand, like, adult sophisticated humor. So what they do like is just really stupid wordplay. Like, that's just, and you like, any comic, like, that'd be an interesting Pavlov experiment to do. Like, if you would get a comic unbeknownst to him and you'd have the audience laugh at the worst parts of his material and stay stone-faced during the best parts, could you actually warp a comic's sense of humor? Because I think that's what happens with dads. They're just trying to play to an audience in diapers that eat dirt, that thinks Pokemon are cool. And then eventually they turn into surly teenagers and they don't like it anymore, but you're still trying to material. It's like, you know, you had a comic, like, I don't understand, this stuff's slayed yesterday. And that's what's happening to Jeff. He's still in that mode where, you know, he's still trying to find the dumb dad jokes, but they're not working because Kelly sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are the odds
that
the cops...
She didn't suck, I'm sure.
What are the odds that the cops find some sprayed DNA that ties back to...
Yeah, that was my worry too. Yeah, I mean, to match DNA, you got to have something to match against, right? Do they have the DNA from Jeff? Do they have the DNA from Shauna?
They would Shauna though, yeah. Right? Like, that's like, yeah, like that medical, that'd probably be part of the investigation, you know? I would think that all these
girls...
Do they
have it, like,
fingerprints
I mean,
and
1998,
DNA.
You weren't like... You weren't grabbing people's DNA up, right?
That was right. That was the dawn, because, like, the OJ trials around there, and that's, I think, when DNA evidence arrived, right? Now, I mean, obviously, it'd probably been around a decade before that, but that was the first time where it's like, well, fuck, it's DNA evidence. What are you going to do? So maybe.
I think in that case, I mean, in the OJ case, like, they had the DNA on the scene, and, they would take material from the person that they already suspected, right? I don't know that they're going to be able to match this up. This is me, like, trying to give the show a little leeway to say maybe these characters, you know, are not as stupid as that seems, because that's a really dumb thing to do in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, the websites online have, like, your genetic sequence, even if your distant cousin got their genes sequenced, right? They can still pinpoint you based on their shit. Yeah. Bad idea today. Don't do it.
Speaking of musical cue, I dug that they had Garbage Shirley Manson belting out Number One Crush, which is all about kind of an obsessive relationship, a person that, like a one-sided relationship, a person who will suffer any amounts of slings and arrows for another person, and you're not even sure if this is an offer. It's not like a commitment from within the confines of religion. They're just like throwing themselves at this person's feet. And it's interesting to explore, like, who is being talked about here. Is this Jeff? How he feels about Shauna?
Yeah, I guess.
It's interesting to find out how we'll feel about the relationship now as we find out more. Because like, it seemed like Jeff is kind of like a fuckboy in high school. But that's not an, that's many such cases.
Yeah, what is the impulse? Okay, you talk me through that. What is the impulse here that causes him to get turned on and Shauna to identify with it? Is it the idea that like your spouse is so desirable by someone else? It's like validation and that feels good.
Cuck has entered the vocabulary of modern day after being dormant for like 100 years, you know, hundreds of years. And there's also like now it's like if your girlfriend is got an Instagram and another guy likes it, you got cucked, right?
Yeah, it's overused like everything.
Yeah. It's essentially just another word for beta male at this point. But like the psychology is, yeah, it's like someone that gets attracted by, and I guess there's two forms. There's like some people that are into the shame of it, like you know the fact that this person that you love the attraction to. Are you know not giving you that and giving it to somebody else and you want it and you know it's like this it's like kind of and then there's also I guess the more you know like the hot wife stag type of thing where it's like yes your partner is so sexy and so desirable that like you get off on that validation from third parties.
So I'm super shame averse. I'm like yeah the shame stuff would not do it for me. I don't think the other route would do it for me either, but like
yeah
I can at least understand it.
I get it. It's like there's two types of people. There's two types of people. It's like if you buy a sports car and it says hot sports car and you go around your buddies, do you want your buddies to drink? Because do you want all your buddies to be, oh, my God, look at that sports car. I can't even imagine what it's like to drive it and all that. And like, do you get off on the fact that you have this and you might, you know, like your buddies can look, but they can't touch and they can never sit behind a drive. Or are you the type of guy to like flip the keys and like this fucking thing's going to blow your fucking mind. I want you to know how fucking amazing this car is that I drive. And I feel like
and then think about how I drive it every day. Yeah.
Yeah, I can. Like I said, I'm fucking from the mid. I'm from Indiana. I don't get any of this shit, but I can at least understand
some of it, but like, yeah.
And it's like, did you know that there's the feminine equivalent of a cuck is a cuck queen?
Okay.
And I think that's that the Shauna. Well, it's the same thing. It's a wife being attracted to the idea that she has a hot husband that's out there slaying puss. And you know, either that she, yeah, that she's being validated by other women's desire, or it's a shame kind of one down type of situation. But she kind of outs herself as that like,
oh yeah,
yeah, it's scary when it happened, but also was hot. You know, imagine.
Yeah, I mean,
all
she's simpatico,
happening.
Right? She's like explaining the feelings that he's feeling, yeah. And he's like, yep. Actually, that's right. Let's do it here on this table.
And struggling with feeling perverted about it and the shame of that. And then she just accepts that who she is. And yeah, now they're, yeah. And I don't know where they go with this, because if this is like going to be like, are they going to chase this? Is this going to be something that just juices up their current relationship? Yeah. And the fact
we'll see.
The thing is deeply, okay, let's like, because I was like, okay, we talked about in a pretty non-judgment way this whole fetish and everything. The deeply problematic aspect of this is that she's murdered this man.
Uh-huh. Oh,
they
yeah.
They're doing this amongst his things, amongst the you know, his
this
vision.
Is the shit I'm talking about when I say this show is willing to go places that a lot of other shows won't. This.
You want as a couple pick up guys and gals at a bar or get on, I don't know, fucking Tinder or FetLife, fine. But let's not murder people. Let's not get into, you know, fucking Maquis de Sade type territories with it, all right? Can we just...
Right, and then give our children complexes because we're gaslighting them the entire time about it.
Safe, sane, consensual is what we're looking for here.
Yeah. All right, let's head back to the wilderness. Shauna is staring at the ear when she's called to dinner. Misty is stirring the soup, which is against the rules. And the other girls call her on it and send her outside to get water. Thaisa asks Shauna if she's okay. What is the rules? The rule is Misty can't touch the food. Is that the rule?
Apparently so. And that's a good rule. I like that rule. I believe in that rule. That rule protects us all. Yeah.
If only they knew, they might have a Shauna rule too.
But they let her collect the water.
Yeah, that seems foolish.
Do they not know how chemical compounds work? Like,
water's role as a universal solvent. It's wild. I do think that's that theory of some kind of lead or some kind of, because like I think Misty would know all the shit that could poison you out in the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's the one who knows about the mushrooms, right? Like which ones are good, which ones are bad.
Yeah, and she probably knows all about the different minerals and compounds and things like that. And but it's weird because like I got the idea, because they seem like this is a lottery system. Like you're the one that drew fours again. Are they rigging this deal just to fuck with her because they're giving her a shit job because they hate her? Because that's the impression I got. That like Misty's a smart person and she knows this isn't random chance. They're fucking with her.
Yeah, it's been too many times in a row or something.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Yeah.
All right, let's head back to current day where Jeff and Shauna literally deface all of Adam's paintings and Misty breaks into Nat's hotel room. I thought when they start splashing turpentine or whatever around mineral spirits that they were going to burn these paintings. Instead, they're just messing
up
the faces.
That would be really stupid because some guy goes missing and then unrelated a couple days later, his art studio burns down.
So here's the interesting thing is I feel like this is telling. Like, yes, it gets rid of Shauna's face, so they don't know exactly who, but this tells a story, right?
This
tells a story of either, you know, someone coming in here and covering up evidence, A, which is true, but B, it could also tell the story of Adam fell in love with somebody and got hurt by them, and now he's pissed off and he's creating, he's putting that onto canvas, right? So he's scratching out all the faces of these people. That's going to make them search even harder for the person
connection.
In the painting.
Yeah. That is some kind of motive for something, yeah. This is an obsession that has been perverted and redirected, and it's already, the funny thing is like the picture that Jeff seems to fixate on the most is the picture where her skin is kind of like dissolved and like it's showed. Did you see the one?
Yeah,
the ghoulish version
like
of Shauna
is looking at. It's horrible. Yeah.
So like I wonder if that's what he painted after, because they, you know, they're I don't know. It's I thought the same thing. Like this is not a solution, guys. It's a story that's not true, but it's a story that's going to demand to be the threads of it pulled, and it's going to lead to
an
investigation.
And that'll unravel the true story.
I was also wondering if, like, can the cops tell? Like, can you forensically tell how long it's been, like, within the matter of days, how long it's been since turpentine has been added to something? And, like, it would seem like just by, I don't know, maybe so volatile it all evaporates within a matter of minutes or hours. But I wondered if there's going to be some forensic, as, like, someone entered the studio after, or if he's got an alarm system that, like, logs the entries and exits, and it's going to, because
he's got a Ring doorbell, and it just captured
because he left this studio with like the music, like that music is diegetic, it's coming from within, like he's,
I think it's
just
coming
got
from a neighboring studio.
I never considered
that's how
that.
I read it.
Okay, I thought it was just like
letting you know there are people around, like visible.
Is it attached to like a club or something? Well then
I'd assume it's an artist doing the right thing.
I think they should have called Misty. I think they should have called the cleaner before they did something like this. They should have been honest with Misty but
take
Shauna,
those paintings, roll them up, like take the canvas off the frame, roll them up, stick them in your pants and walk out the door.
That's my first thought is like, why not cut these out of the frames and take them?
Yeah, take them. Take them and burn them in your grill. Although
now,
we've
that
seen
might,
how that works
I don't
out.
Know, like that, I wonder if that, like, but like, yeah, it feels like if you could pull them off the frames and stack all the frames neatly and take, and then like, what, that's an artist studio. He's got a bunch of empty frames ready for canvassing.
I mean, they go in this place without gloves. You know, it's one thing to spray your DNA everywhere. It's another to leave fingerprints, which are almost certainly on file.
That's what I'm saying is that, like, is some of this stuff just them being dumb and not being good at committing crimes? Is some of this, like, how well do the writers know how all this stuff works?
I mean, we've seen in the preview that she gets interrogated. Like, the cops show up at their house. So it's not like they're not going to know who.
Well, now that Kelly knows, they were like multiple avenues of being fucked already. But when your daughter highly suspects that you are now I think she didn't necessarily suspect, but now she certainly suspects that her mom and dad killed this guy.
Uh huh. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. We go back to the wilderness now. Crystal goes outside to sing, and Misty is being driven crazy by it. And so Crystal offers to teach her to sing. We could harmonize. Misty might be making a friend here. Is that the expression that I get? Like, oh, someone wants to spend time with me?
I think so. Yeah, she's got a crumb of affection. Also, like, Misty's default, like, you can see why, like, I mean that's the thing, because, like, you can kind of see, like, why kids don't like Misty. You know, like, she comes out of this thing singing, and Misty's like a shit to her, and, oh, singing sucks, and then most people be like, yeah, fuck you, and go on with their lives. But Crystal, because she's got a little bit of maybe this Misty stuff going on too, keeps going and, like, offers to, like, oh, no, anyone can sing. I bet I can, if you had a right vocal coach, I could coach you. And now Misty sees, like, oh, I could, you know, here's a relationship I can get into. I don't know.
Or here's someone I can exploit, maybe. I don't know how Machiavellian Misty is yet.
I think she thinks in terms of, like, people that she, well, coach she tried to make hers for sure.
Ugh.
And
yeah,
was not above manipulating shit out of that situation. But I also think she mistook some of his, had ownership over him because she saved his life and kind of nursed him back to health. And she also mistook some of his gratitude and just being nice as like advances.
Yeah, totally. Because she had a crush and that's what she wanted to see.
Right.
Speaking of coach asked Nat how the hunting went. Not great, but she did draw a map of their latest explorations, which they add to the larger map they've been creating. Coach says there's no way Javi's still alive, but Nat already knows. She's just searching because she's trying to help Travis.
I want to talk about this other, now that we're talking about maps and whatnot. There's one thing I noticed, that this was on the back of a history civics lesson. It was asking a bunch of questions like how many terms could a president do, all that.
Love it.
And the camera weirdly hesitates on it. Like, they want you to freeze frame and look at this, and it's nice and clear. Why?
I think it's this is so far from their reality right now. Like, think about what they would be doing in their lives if this didn't happen to them.
And so you think so the coach himself map, was right? Like, oh, God, this is homework. But, all you know, it was like his okay. I wonder if it had something to do with
the difference between their existence now and their existence before the crash.
I was wondering if it had something to do with Tyze's election campaign. Was just ties into that somehow. But I couldn't see how it does. So we're talking about making maps. One of the other popular theories about this symbol of the Yellow Jackets, it's secretly a map. And
a map.
Not just any map, a subterranean map. That if you flip this thing upside down, the little hook thing becomes a tree that marks the beginning of a tunnel that has a mountain that goes underground, and you have three primary mine shafts, and then there is a circle like where the mother lode or where a discovery has been made.
Okay.
You buying that?
I mean, the thing is, based on the mine shaft idea.
So you know how these, you know how these theories, you know how these, this theory crafting goes. You have all these like random facts, like, oh, someone's seen a vision of a tunnel, and oh, a river was red. What could cause a river to be red? Oh, some kind of mineral or lead. And oh, they're going crazy. What are the things that could cause historically people to go crazy? And you start just like pulling at this, and oh, we're seeing her making maps. What if this is a map of an? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not hot on the mine theory because I don't think what we see Lottie envisioning is a mine shaft by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure, but I could see it being something intentionally constructed for ritualistic purposes. Perhaps
I think
they just landed in that.
I think it's analogous to Ty's basement that you're probably going to find out in their high school, that there is some abandoned maintenance tunnel that no one ever goes down to, not even the janitors really, because, and she's going to discover it and turn it into some kind of shrine where she can continue this antler queen purple people eating cult with Van and Ty and all her other followers inside the high school. That's what my thing. I don't think it has anything to do with the mines or that, so
But we'll see. Right.
Yeah, it's as good a theory as any at this point. I do like, you know, they're doing this systematically. There's a 7-mile radius that they've been searching in. They are searching based on grids. So they're going out to a specific area to search it and coming back with a map to say, hey, we searched this. I noticed that the cabin and the lake they're at is 7 miles away from the plane, which is right on the edge of the map. So they're just getting back to searching. I think it may be depending on, you know, how often they're going out searching, which I assume is every day. Maybe to, like 2-3 days ago, they were searching the plane. And you know, depending on the order in which they're searching and all that stuff. But like the plane's right on the edge of the map. I wonder if there's some kind of like boundary within the map we're seeing, and that as they, you know, with them marking that place and them seeing some bad omens like fox corpses and this weird tree thing that we're going to talk about here in a second, if they are not getting to some spiritual boundary in the wilderness or something, some kind of weird supernatural boundary thing. I'm still looking for the supernatural in this show.
Sure. They're like contained in some kind of, like, do you remember that movie, The Endless, we watched, where like there was about these essentialist time space bubbles that would form randomly and you get trapped inside of them, something like that?
Yeah. Or was it the same people made that other movie about the cult and they got trapped in there? Or was that the same movie?
I might think it's the same movie because they also had a cult within the time bubble.
Okay, because there was one where they were sitting at the dinner table for like the entire movie, but that was a different one, right?
Oh, where they had the glow sticks?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah. No, I forget what that movie was. Okay. We forgot something that this is an incidental thing. You might not even picked it up, but like when in the discussion of the rescue, where there's all this like fast talking reporter stuff in the background, they mentioned that this flight was 600 miles north of its flight projected flight path.
600?
How the fuck do you make a navigational error of that magnitude?
Wow.
Maybe they said 60. Even that is a fucking lot, but I thought it said, I thought clearly I wrote down as it's 600 miles because I'm like, what the hell?
60 might be understandable. 600 is insane. I mean, you'd have to be flying for hours, not realizing you were flying in the wrong direction.
And people are trying to, like, that's another part of the mind theory.
Well,
that there's something
so there's that
special about
stuff that happened around the lake or the stream.
Yes. And this is the other part of the mind theory, that there's some kind of like lodestone type of magnetic material or maybe even, you know, something supernatural or paranormal or alien that's thrown up. But like, 600 is like, it's a wild, wild deviation from the course. And no wonder they couldn't be found.
All right, let's go back to current day. Misty cries about Nat leaving. Then she notices that Nat's room was broken into. She also notices that a surveillance camera is pointed at the door. I like this. I really like this. This gives her, this is both a plot moment and a character moment, because Misty sees that the room was broken into, and this gives her plausible deniability to think that Nat has not abandoned her, even though Nat would 100% abandon her at the drop of a hat. Misty's clinging to whatever kind of weird relationship they've reformed here as adults.
Yeah.
I love it. And it also, you know, sends her down the path of maybe discovering Lottie's cult, which I'm excited
for. I also like the hotel manager because, like, he clearly knew this. So he gave it just enough to shut her up, but not the whole truth. He's still trying to keep to his discretion.
Totally. Yeah.
Bravo.
Oh, So I thought, and maybe this is stupid of me, I thought the cult was the one who, like, patched up the door. There's no real indication. Like, it could have been the motel clerk, or it could have been them.
Yeah, you're right, because it was hastily and shoddily done, but that also could be the no-tell motel policy. Like,
somebody
split in the middle of the night. And I guess that's like, interesting.
I don't know. It could be either.
Yeah, could be. That's a good point. We'll have to continue to watch.
So we go to the cult, and we go to Nat for the first time since she was taken. She's thrashing around, chained to a bed. Someone comes in and gives her food, unshackling one of her hands so she can eat. and then makes the classic mistake of leaving the room. What are you doing? Watch her eat. She doesn't need her. This is not, you know, this is not the Hague. They're not going to come in and like say, hey, are you treating this prisoner correctly? You're a crazy cult. Treat her however you want and stay in the room and watch her eat.
Do you think this is all deliberate, though? Because I feel like it's something that it seems like one of the most youngest and most inexperienced cult members was given this very dangerous task. We see the rest of the cult, and they are, there's people who are older, mature, larger, big, strong men. But they give this, and I wondered if it looks like this woman would be approximately the same age as what Shauna's daughter would be, but I
maybe slightly older, but yeah, close.
I don't think that they look like the actually, this woman looked more like Lottie's daughter, I thought.
Oh, you were wondering if this is maybe the baby from the wilderness?
I was, but like, because I think the ages line up, but like, again, the physical appearance, like, this doesn't look like a good mix of Jeff and Shauna.
No.
But it could be a plausible mix of like Lottie and someone else. So I wonder if there's some kind of
sex magic
going on. There's some kind of hunting. We didn't see what happens after you stick the pine cone in the mouth. It was interrupted. Like,
true.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting. And like, but my point is, I think this was orchestrated. This was something that Lottie wanted to happen.
Yeah. All right. Jeff sits in the car. We're back. We're still in current day. Yeah. Sits in the car thinking about fucking Shauna at Adam's studio and thrashes around to Papa Roach. Then he brings hot dogs to the barbecue where they're burning Adam's IDs. Okay. I can get in the headspace. I can understand the impulse that would bring them to have sex in Adam's studio. What I can't understand is the impulse to listen to Papa Roach. The wilderness is the space between the ads. We'll be right back. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. don't freeze to death. Come back to our coverage of Yellow Jackets. I can't put my head in that space. No.
You're like Last Retort?
No, I can't. I'm sorry.
I'm a bit of a fan. It's not my favorite, but you know.
All right. To each their own. I love the barbecue
scene.
This
is materially worse than Stone Temple Pilots and Soundgarden, really?
100%. Okay. Oh my God. You offended every kid from the... You just offended everybody from the 90s. Everybody.
I am from the 90s.
Is it
There's
materially worse than Soundgarden, one of the greatest bands of all time? All right. I'm just going to let that sit there.
It's this whole genre of grunge metal that came out to say, you know, I get to some of the better
Roach.
Than worse, but like Papa Roach is like the Last Retort is the scraping the bottom of that barrel. I don't know about that.
Papa Roach is A, they're more new metal than anything, and B, they suck.
Yellow Jackets at baldmove.com. I want to hear all dozen.
Oh God!
The Papa Roach stands coming forth.
The late Chris Cornell is going to rise up out of his grave to email us about that take.
Also, this is a 2000, so they're slightly extending the era. But I guess, you know, like it kind of like it probably all runs together.
Yeah, we're getting into like 1998 here, and we see the kids coming back. I'm sure they listen to music after this experience.
Sure,
so
sure.
And especially Jeff, right? Like Jeff never left. So Jeff has this in his catalog of favorite rage songs, I guess. Like he's raging out here, right? He doesn't.
Is he rocking out? Or...
I'm trying to determine the emotion here.
Probably a lot of emotions in going into it.
There's a lot of fear,
revulsion, attraction, shame. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a stew. I ask you, what was the point of Catching a Tree on Fire? Is that just to show that they're just really bad at this?
I think so. I love it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just
okay.
These idiots.
Because I kept on thinking like, what's the mistake they make to get them caught? And ultimately, it's all of them. But like, yeah,
right,
the tree
right.
just seems, yeah, it's just like, I guess a funny moment.
Yeah, they needed Misty for this because they're so bad at it.
All right.
Taisa goes to the basement to smell laundry, I guess, and takes a waking tour of the dog altar. Steve, the dog, also gets a front row view, and she promises to do better with him.
Jim, you've never, after a bad breakup, had a sweater or a shirt from your former lover and, like, got a whiff or a pillow and got a whiff and, like, you know, been sentimental? Never? Because that's what's happening. Like, she's not just smelling laundry. She's smelling Simone.
Yeah. No, I get it. I'm trying to think if I've ever had an article of clothing left over from an ex.
You make sure they're all safely incinerated so you don't get caught, right?
Yeah, they all go to the barbecue immediately.
You don't make those
kind of
mistakes.
Yeah.
You got no Snoopy. Got no snooping kids.
Nope. No, I can't say that I've smelled anybody's laundry but my own. I don't know. Does that make me weird? Should I be out there smelling more laundry? Am I doing life wrong?
I don't know. Like, I never know. Cause like I never know what things to, you know, like it resonated me. Cause I've definitely been that guy. That's like, oh God, this shirt or this pillowcase, it's, you know, it smells like her or whatever.
Yeah.
But,
the sentimentality. I get it.
Yeah. But I don't know. Who's to say what's weird?
True.
I feel like the bad mom was fully in control of Taiza until she saw the altar and like at the good mom snapped back into place. Like for the first time in the entire episode, she actually shows some kind of like what I would call human feelings towards this poor dog, and she's promising to do better with it, and she's shocked and horrified, and like did you get that she's like this shifted her personality back?
Yeah, I think she's scared of herself, right? Like, she knows that this is a bad scene. Her sleepwalking. It never leads to good things, right? She's not, like, baking cakes or solving crimes or anything when she's sleeping.
Right.
She's doing terrible shit.
But last season, I thought that like good Thaisa had kind of been in play throughout the last few episodes. And then, you know, when she finds out she wins, there was this kind of like dawning shock and horror. But then it turns in this kind of like cruel smile. And I felt that flipped to the bad mom part. And she's been kind of floating in bad mom mode up until just this scene. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's I'm always looking for those switches flipping.
All right, let's go over to Shauna's family eating dinner together. Shauna and Jeff are getting along, and it's annoying Kelly. She hates it when her parents are good to each other. I
just want to know what the fuck so these licenses up. Are made of that they can withstand not one but two rounds of cooking with charcoal.
Right. He goes out like, there oh and my. Cooks her dinner.
Yeah, like it's like, oh, okay, your fucking hot dogs, your hog anus is suck. I want my vegan burger. And, you know, Shauna, of course, Jeff is dumb. Shauna's like bulges her eyes out. He's like, oh, let me cook that for you because I'm the grill master. But yeah, how the fuck did this license survive?
I don't know, man. Just enough of it with this picture, too.
The worst part of the license to survive.
Yeah.
Although, honestly, you find any half-burnt license in your parents' grill and you medium suspect them of murder, that's going to make you go to high suspect.
For sure.
High suspicion. A birth certificate. Yeah, what the fuck are you burning out there, Mom?
Right. Let's go back to the wilderness. Travis and Nat sit up at night by the fire. They start talking about hobby, and Travis starts having a panic attack. Lottie comes to calm him, and he sees visions of light emanating from a tree stump. Which does calm him, but it also makes him rock hard. Lottie tells him that his brother's alive, and Nat pulls her aside to say, stop giving him false hope.
This show, man. Every time I'm like, I'm sucked into human drama, and then, fucking Travis just has a redwood in his pants.
Is that the stump that he's seeing?
Oh, a severed stump, perhaps? Interesting.
Oh, no.
Travis and Theon both start with T's. I'm just saying.
Yikes. No, I don't like it.
This is the sex magic I'm suggesting.
Yeah, for sure.
You know.
Travis is, he's deep in this, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Remember when they were all tripping on LSD? They not only tried to kill him, but they tried to fuck him too, right? It was, mm-hmm. it was both. So, mm-hmm. yeah. It's all just one big bad stew.
And Lottie maintaining that she's, you know, this isn't something she's doing. She's just saying things that she feels. Obviously, Javi's still alive. Is that obvious?
Javi? No, I don't. Think it's obvious. I mean, he spent 2 months in the wilderness by himself.
Don't the girls like, okay, Travis gets murdered in the first season,
mm-hmm.
but aren't they also like the girls are acting like Javi is a, you know, they're not saying like, oh, Javi died on the plane crash, right? Like, don't they talk about Javi as if he's still alive in season one?
Oh yeah, Javi's 100% alive in season one. What happens is when the LSD session happens.
No, I'm saying like the girls in the present timeline speak of Javi as if he is still alive.
Oh, do they? I don't remember anybody speaking of Javi.
I didn't watch the first half of this, and I feel like a lot of this is around Travis's murder. But I got the clear impression that everyone that he didn't die in the wilderness anyway.
Well, there was some theories that Adam was Travis. Actually, but that I don't think that panned out.
Adam is Travis or Javi?
Or sorry. Yeah.
Okay, because I'm like, what the fuck?
No,
okay. That actually makes a bit of because like I
Yeah, but what does it come to at this point if he's dead, right? I like the theory that Javi is the old man in the cabin better. Like that there's some weird
time. Can you elucidate that?
Loop.
Okay, so you're just saying that there's no evidence for that other than just it'd be a cool connection and it's timey wimey and all that stuff.
Yeah, he's missing. The connection would be like the symbol shows up in the woods, which if you were in a time loop, like it could be both a product and the cause,
yes,
the cause and the effect of the symbol.
Yeah, it closes that loop. Can I say something that I don't think it came up on a preview podcast, but something that I think I'm suspicious of? I never bought that Adam was just some random dude that she got into a car accident with.
I thought that there was something on to that blackmail and something, there's an ulterior motive that, like, a lot of his stated motivations for, like, why he knows as much and why he decided to research all that never carried a lot of water. So I would, like, totally be on that he's Javi. And that would actually make some kind of cool sense if, like, these girls are directly responsible for the death of both these men. Either Lottie's cult persecuting, you know, Travis into committing suicide, or actually killing him through a cult wet, like, and that they are manipulating them to do this. Because, like, also that's something Lottie was obsessed with. There has to be bloodletting. Every time something happens, there has to be bloodletting. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that Adam is just nobody.
Maybe Adam's a cult member who is, like, you know, snooping around Shauna.
Would you never, if you, like, the other thing as I'm thinking is, like, would Shauna not recognize Javi as Adam eventually?
You would think so, yeah.
Yeah, I would, you know, although, like, people change, but, like, that much? Like, you're fucking them over the course of several weeks and you don't realize that, like, oh, shit, you're Travis's little brother.
Yeah. I don't know how much time.
But I'm trying to think. It's like if any of my sister's girlfriends back in the day came up to me now and decided to rear end me and then seduce me, how long would it take me to figure out? Like, oh my god, you're what? Yeah. Whoever, you know, probably a while, if at all.
Totally. All right. Current day again. Nat's caregiver comes back to reshackle her, but she gets a fork in the hand for her trouble. And Nat runs outside to escape with people pursuing her.
Juliette Lewis's whole performance stomping around in this diaphanous robe, flapping in the breeze and running around her high heels, just like it's really, her performance in this episode is really funny.
I mean, she's no stranger to running through the woods, right? Like,
sure.
Of anybody, she's probably the most equipped to not lose her shit running through the woods in the dark. So
yeah,
I like that. It's a good thing this girl got her hand up, because that would have been a fork in the eye.
Or the jugular. It looked like she was aiming for the neck to me.
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. And it went through her hand. Like, it was, yeah, if it hits neck, it's going deep.
No, she was aiming to maim, for
sure.
You
don't fuck with Nat,
if
man.
Not kill. Yeah. And then we go back to the wilderness again. Thaisa starts making out with Van in her sleep and only wakes up when she bites her lip loud enough that she screams. Van tells her she's never going to stop protecting her from her sleep self. And then she says, I love you, for the first time, by writing it in blood on her arm. And Thaisa reciprocates.
Yep. Young love. What can you say?
All right, let me ask you this. Is Thaisa really asleep during this kissing scene, or is she trying to get Van to give up?
I've never had direct experience, but I've been friends with someone who had a intimate relationship that slept walk. And it's my impression that they can be open eyes, having conversations, and still be in a sleep state. But they're definitely filming it, I thought, because I was looking for something in Ty's eyes to change, like a snap to focus or something. I never saw it.
It felt to me like she's trying to get to Van so that she'll let her off this leash. And I don't know if that's like the bad one, you know, as Sammy would describe it, doing that, or if that is just Thaisa trying to get her off the hook, basically, for protecting her.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was filmed deliberately ambiguous, so you're not sure if it's the flipping of the switch or if it's Ty being manipulative, or...
Especially after you see the rope burns on her wrist, right? Thaisa probably feels bad about that, and she doesn't want her to have to go through this, so is she wanting to trick her into giving up? I don't know.
But it's also funny how Ty is like, I think Van's cool, but I like the idea that, like, Ty's is like, oh, I can't do this, I'm hurting you. And like Van's like, look at my face. I had a wolf half rip it off. Like, I am not afraid of you. You can't hurt me like that.
Yeah.
I thought that was,
and you
thought
saved
that was
me
really,
from that, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was really sweet in the weird fucked up Yellow Jackets way that it often is.
Totally. I go back to current day. Nat continues running through the woods and eventually runs into some fucked up animal nudity burial ritual led by Lottie. Natalie tries to attack her with a stick, but Lottie stops her by saying she has a message for Nat from Travis.
I love how she whops that one dude in the mask with the stick, and because he's a big dude, and he's like, oh, and kind of is like from within the muffled echo of his mask. And are they going to kill this guy, or is this like you're being made into, they're going to performatively bury you and then bring you back to life, and now you're a full-blooded member of the cult? I
really don't know. I wouldn't put it past him to just kill him.
Yeah.
To sacrifice him, but
yeah,
it would also make sense as an initiation of sorts. A baptism.
I also think this, I got a clear impression that Lottie intended all this, because she seems like completely unsurprised. Of course, I guess she could also have foretold in the future. But she doesn't seem like at all surprised at all, and she's instantly got something to put Nat on her back foot, which is, I have a message from Travis. And Juliette Lewis's face that she makes on this revelation is hysterical. Like
twitchy. Yeah.
It's like the upside down smile emoji on a real person's face. I don't know how she pulled it off, but she's Juliette Lewis.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complex emotion, you know? She's
had a lifetime of playing crazy people just to lead up to this.
She's so resistant to this. Like, she thinks Lottie's crazy, right? And
yeah.
But this is her weakness.
She seems most resistant to the idea of the Antler Queen bullshit.
Right, but Travis is her weakness. I mean, the emotion here is so complex. Sure. I don't know what expression you can give that says it all, other than the one that Juliette Lewis lands on, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's excited by this news. She's repulsed by her own excitement at the news because she thinks it's all bullshit.
Right.
This person she thinks has murdered Travis, and yet she's getting to her. Like, she's pissed off at herself. There's so much going on in that one look that it's just perfect, and it's so hard to pull off. Mm-hmm. She nails it. And then we get to the end of the episode where several things happen. We're jumping back and forth between modern day and the wilderness, I think. Teen Shauna is pacing. Teen Travis and Nat continue searching for Javi. Kelly finds the remnants of Adam's ID in her parents' grill. And Shauna takes a bite of Jackie's ear, cut to black.
Eats it like a Toll House cookie.
Yep. All set to Tori Amos' Cornflake Girl. Another just banger. This song is so good.
Brilliant pull. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, thematically, it's amazing. The song itself is just amazing. There's a lot of strange stuff happening here, not just the ear bite. What is the thing that Nat sees at the base of this tree that makes her say weird? Is it the moss that is growing in the winter?
So what did you have any, because I know what I think it looks like, but I was wondering if you had, before I said mine, do you have any?
I mean, that was literally it. Like, does moss not grow in the winter? Because I thought moss stayed green.
It does.
Pretty much always.
I thought they're suggesting that this looks like a tree where someone sat at the base of it for a long time.
Oh, their warm ass had melted all the snow.
Like,
there's
like, you can see kind of like the snow's been pushed aside, and like, it's something like if someone was sit and put their back against a tree, like all this snow had been scraped, and that their body heat had melted, and then that's not, you might feel a body there, but like that they got up and left implies that someone, and even recently, because the snow is not, obviously it's snowing all the time up there, has not replenished it. It's like, it's evidence that some living thing has stayed at this tree and then got up and walked away. It may have been a little trail, but it's hard to see because like the there's definitely a trail there, but also Travis and Nat had just walked to it. So that's what I thought they were, but it's kind of unclear. There wasn't anything else as far as like an occult symbol or an artifact or a not. It just seemed like it was like, yes, this looks like a place where someone just sat recently.
That might make sense. Boy, I know it's been 2 months, but is it possible that Javi is just still scared? Because, like, he left under some pretty dire circumstances. Like, the girls were actively chasing down his brother. He was yelled at by one of them to run. And I can imagine a scenario where Javi is, like, out there kind of observing them to see if it's safe to come back, and he sees shit that he doesn't like, and decides, I'm not coming back yet. And so he's avoiding being spotted.
I could buy that. I mean, that's like being hunted by feral women would be an unsettling experience for young man, I'd imagine.
For sure, yeah. So I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, and we talked about Kelly digging through the parent or the barbecue and finding the fragment of Adam's driver's license. Who knows what other fragments are in there that she can start piecing together? That's my first thought, is like, well, if that survived, what else did? God damn, Shauna and Jeff are bad at their job.
They sure are.
Jeff went out there and restarted the grill. You stir through the ashes, man. Just you know, while you're out there setting up the briquettes, just give it a good look over.
I want to talk in more depth about Cornflake Girl.
Okay.
How it's about a story about a girl not fitting in anywhere. I think Cornflake Girl is about like Tori Amos' experience in not Hollywood, but in the music industry, and how poorly she was treated by it and never felt like she fit in there because she didn't, you know, want to conform as much as they wanted her to. That feels like a story they're telling here in Yellow Jackets. Some of the lyrics feel like they directly apply, like, this is not really happening. And then the retort, you bet your life it is. Like, that feels imminently relatable to their situation. Because none of them want to be in here, but it's happening, whether they want it or not. There's a lot of stuff. There was actually a good Variety article that I read about this song in this episode. They don't touch on quite all those themes, but they do go into some more detail about Tori Amos' career and what this song and the album in general Under the Pink might mean, and how it relates to Yellow Jackets, that I suggest you check out over on Variety.
All right, what else we
that's
got?
That's about it.
We're ready to wrap it up for the week. Okay, yeah. Well, curious to see what you guys thought of this episode. Yellowjackets at baldmove.com is how you get in your feedback for the podcast. We are going to probably not be considering that next week because I'm going to be gone. There'll be a guest host type situation. Pete Peppers, who helped us out with the preview podcast, is going to help Jim out with that next week. I'll be in Florida on spring break with my family. Just in time. It seems like there's biblical plagues hitting Florida right now. There's a red tide. There's a plague of seaweed that's heading.
Saw that mercury in the water.
Lots of mercury. Yeah, I might end up being hunted.
That would explain Florida pretty nicely, right?
Yeah,
just mercury filled water.
Of course, if you know, there's enough LSD, a crocodile, an alligator can look like a woman, right?
True.
Enough with enough chemicals coursing through your system. Anyway, this is me stalling. Twitter.com/baldmove if you want to follow us. And hey, if you're liking the cut of our jib and you want to support us here in the early goings of season two, support.baldmove.com for all the great ways that you can do that, and ways you can get ad-free feeds and bonus audio content. Anyway, I can't wait to see what happens. Can't wait to catch back up with Jim after I get back for episode 3. But until then, we'll see you next week. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.